book of 1 Samuel. I have a test on this book. We should probably have it in about... Can't wait too long. Can you get it in a week from this Friday? Week from today? How about the Wednesday after that? A week from the coming Wednesday. December 17th. It's cutting it mighty close. And I have a test on 2 Samuel. We'll finish the book of 2 Samuel this semester. I have covered the entire book in 4 hours before. Actually, if you'll look at 2 Samuel, there are a lot of really short chapters. And so, it's not as long as 1 Samuel. It's only about half as long. We'll have a test on 2 Samuel the last day of class. Which is what? The 24th? Monday the 22nd is the last day of Bible college?
No.
So we have to have it on a Monday? And if you are leaving early to go out of town or on vacation or something, you can notify me and you can take the test on the Friday before, whatever you want to do. Monday? The test on 1 Samuel is a printed test. The test on 2 Samuel is dictated. I've never printed it. It's more of a quiz than a test. The test on 1 Samuel, you study for both of these. 1 Samuel is a printed test with multiple choice and check all that apply. 2 Samuel, the entire test is out of the King James Bible. No typology questions. No any questions other than what's out of the King James Bible. If you read the narrative well and know the principal characters in 2 Samuel, you should do well on the test. First Samuel does ask some questions of scope and background and how long the book is and that kind of thing. So you have to study your notes for that. 2 Samuel, you can just study the Bible. You'll get along fine. Chapter 28 of 1 Samuel. Satan has many plans to keep you from getting to the place where you're ruling and reigning with him. The last thing Satan wants is for you to fulfill God's call for your life, whatever that call is. We're not all called to be the king of Israel, but we are called to rule and reign with Christ. And to experientially occupy that position, seated in the heavenlies with him, there's going to be many battles. You'll have to prove your valor by fighting Goliath in your own personal life. But then, Satan will raise up religious people in the church to persecute you and try to frustrate you and keep you from God's plan. And you'll just have to learn to totally trust God and see God bring you there. Then the devil will attack you with discouragement over the length of the battle. You know, it's amazing what can happen to a person when they've been in a battle for a long time. You get spiritually tired and worn out. It can even make you physically tired. It's like a mental and emotional and spiritual tiredness makes you physically tired. Being in bed can be just a wonderful place to be. Getting out of bed in the morning to face another demonic battle. You know what you have? You have the symptoms of depression. That's what you have. If you ever studied depression, I've studied depression. You have the symptoms of depression, long spiritual battle, pressure. It's important to keep moving in the Spirit and to not let these things just totally weigh us down, lest we be like David in chapter 27, verse 1. We come under certain demons and then begin to react and make decisions and get ourselves off. Chapter 28, David is out of God's will. He's off, and the devil has maneuvered him into a position where it looks like the devil can prevent him from ever becoming king of Israel. If the rest of Israel see David as Achish's bodyguard, you can just about forget they're going to vote for him at ballot time. But in the meantime, Saul went down to the witch of Endor. Verse 12. Verse 11, bring up Samuel. Verse 12, when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. The woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? Thou art Saul. The king said, be not afraid. What sawest thou? The woman said, I saw Elohim ascending out of the earth. Now, translating it God's plural here is purely up to the translator. Elohim, being a plural of majesty, may very well be just God. I saw God descending out of the earth. Go ahead. Barbara experienced the spirit of Abraham. What do I think about that? Bring that up after I finish commenting on this as to whether or not they experienced the spirit of Samuel here. And just hold that for about 15 minutes. He said unto her, what form is he of? She said, an old man cometh up. He is covered with a mantle. Now, believe me, in the spirit realm, Samuel isn't an old man, and he isn't covered with a mantle. Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? Saul answered, I am sore distressed. The Philistines make war against me. God is departed from me. He answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. This is how dark the mind of Saul is. Then said Samuel, wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord is departed from thee, and is become thine enemy? The Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. For the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand, and given it to thy neighbor, even to David. Because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing to thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. Tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. That is in Sheol, not necessarily on the right side. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Saul fell on the earth. They besought him to eat, and eventually he did. Now, did this woman bring up Samuel, or did she bring up the familiar spirit that she always brought up? The commentators argue various positions. Now, the woman was used to bringing up the same demon, no matter who you asked for. Bring up Uncle Fred. Here comes the same old demon, you know, and he knows a few things about Uncle Fred, because in the spirit realm, they know different things. Bring up Aunt Martha. Well, the same old demon comes up, you know, and all that. Necromancy. Bring up Samuel, and she didn't get the same demon. She got something that freaked her out. She got something unfamiliar. Now, did she get Samuel? I think she did. I think she did. How did a witch get up Samuel? The witch didn't get up Samuel. God did. God got up Samuel. She was surprised at Samuel. She didn't want Samuel, per se. She wanted the familiar spirit that she always got. God allowed Samuel to come up, as it were, to rebuke Saul, as Samuel had done during his lifetime. Now, notice all this evidence. Verse 12, the woman saw Samuel. Verse 14, Saul perceived that it was Samuel. Verse 15, Samuel came up. Why hast thou disquieted me? Verse 17, the Lord hath done as he spake by me. That's not a demon talking. That's Samuel. The evil spirit wouldn't say, the Lord's done to you what he said through me, you know, back when I was alive. I mean, see, that's not what a demon would say. Verse 19, you'll be with me. That is, in Sheol among the dead. Samuel prophesies the truth, rebukes Saul, and prophesies the future, which the demon couldn't do in verse 19. Verse 16 and verse 20 refer to the words of Samuel. Verse 20. He was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. The scriptures maintain that it's Samuel. Now, can you conjure up the spirit of Samuel? No, but God could bring him up. Now, I got a cross-reference here. 1 Chronicles 10:14. Let me grab that. 1 Chronicles 10:14. God rebuked Saul for doing this and said it was one of the reasons he was slain. Now, what about Barbara experiencing the spirit of Abraham? Well, there's always the question, how did she know it was the spirit of Abraham? But in another, it's like I know a person who said they had a vision of King David. My question is, how do you know you had a vision of King David? How do you know what King David looks like? But yet in the spirit realm, you do know things. You have a knowledge, a real knowledge of things that you don't have in the natural. And so when your spirit, now does your spirit have to go to the spirit realm? I don't think you have to go to the spirit realm. The spirit realm is not from here to there. See, the spirit realm is not three-dimensional. The spirit realm is something different than three-dimensional. It's something different than here to there. You don't have to go anywhere to experience the spirit realm. Your spirit doesn't have to go anywhere. Your spirit merely has to interact with the spirit realm. And so in doing that, there's all kinds of experiences you can have in the spirit realm. Now, if we can experience the spirit of the glorified Christ, which I do believe we're having experiences with the Son of Man and experiencing various attributes of his life, then I think it's just as possible for your spirit to experience other people. And we really don't know everything about the spirit realm. We hardly know, we know very little. And so when someone says their spirit has experienced the spirit of another saint, it's pretty hard to judge that. I mean, a lot of people would immediately maybe write that off, but it's really hard to know if that's possible or impossible. I don't think it violates any text of Scripture. I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with this. Because I think God sovereignly brought up Samuel to rebuke Saul, and that's what happened here. It didn't have anything to do with the witch. But when your spirit is in the spirit realm, you could experience all manner of things. And is that a common experience? Maybe it's an uncommon experience. Lots of people have had very unusual experiences that were just plain unusual and not necessarily to be thought of as something that other people would experience or that could standardly be experienced on a regular basis by that same person. So I don't know. I have thought myself that I would like to experience the spirit of David or Joshua or some of these others, and I might know them better in this book. As I'm experiencing the Spirit of God and I know Him better in this book, I might know more about them, more about the psalmist who wrote in those psalms. I might understand more of his heart. But I'm not necessarily expecting God to do that. I think it could come by the Spirit of God anyway. But there's something that, you know, God may give us. I don't know. I can't really comment too much on it other than to say I've listened to the testimony, and I know there's a lot of things in the spirit realm that probably are going to be experienced by us that will be considered very strange to the natural realm. And I don't even know what the limitations are. What are the limitations in the spirit realm? What are the limitations that your spirit could experience? We don't know what those limitations are. Maybe it's like light. In this life, we on the spectrum of light, we see about this much. That's how much light we see. But there's all kinds of light that isn't seen by the naked eye. All kinds of different waves of light that we don't even see. And it's the same with sound. We hear this much sound. There's all kinds of sounds. We know the dog can hear things we can't hear, pitches and so forth. There are all kinds of things we can't hear. And in the natural, we're limited maybe there's all kinds of experiences in the spirit realm. I remember reading a book by John Lake called Experiences in God. That's all the book was. It's a whole list of experience after experience after experience that this man had. And there were some lulus in there. Some real peculiar things. And one experience, he was praying for somebody in his church in South Africa, and the Lord transported him way up, I think it was up to Great Britain or Scotland or someplace. And when he was going, it was a 10,000-mile journey, when he was going, he actually saw, like he was in an airplane, the journey. He could see the continents down below and see where he was going. That's a strange one. And when he got up to somewhere in Great Britain, he laid hands on somebody that was sick there, and they got healed, and then he returned. And no one there ever knew that he even came into the room. I mean, here he is, a spirit being invisible, came up to Great Britain and prayed for somebody that got healed and went back down to South Africa. Now, that's a strange experience. You think if we have a sick person in our home, somebody's spirit from India is going to come over, lay hands on them, heal them, and then return to you? I mean, no Baptist would accept that experience. He had a lot of experiences like that. And mail was real slow in those days, and about a month later he got a letter from that town or wherever he had been, and that person was healed that very day that he had been there. And if they'd had a phone, he could have called him up when he got back, said, "I was just there. I'm down here now, but I was just had a quick trip. Here's what I experienced. How are you doing up there?" Those are my thoughts on that. Chapter 29. The big battle. The Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek. The lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands. David and his men passed on in the rear ward with Achish. Well, the spirit of compromise can lead you to some real problems. Then said the princes of the Philistines, "What do these Hebrews here?" Achish said unto the princes of the Philistines, "Is not this David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, which hath been with me these days and these years?" Well, 1 year and 4 months. "And I have found no fault in him since he fell unto me this day." The princes of the Philistines were wroth with him. And they said, "Make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place that thou hast appointed him. Let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. Wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men?" Why, in the actual battle, it may provide David an opportunity to join back with Israel, and since he'll be amongst our army, he could be immediately become a traitor to us, prove his loyalty to Saul, and then regain his position in the kingdom of Israel through that means. We don't dare bring David into battle with us because there's a motive of reconciliation might cause him to fight against us in the middle of the battle while we trust him. Verse 5, is not this David whom the folk songs sing about? Achish called David and said unto him, surely as the Lord liveth, thou hast been upright, and thy going out and thy coming in with me in the host is good in my sight. Notice even the king of Philistia says, as Yahweh liveth. He knows what God David worships. Nevertheless, the Lord's favor thee not. Wherefore now return. Verse 8, David said, whew, got out of that jam. But he plays the part. What have I done? What hast thou found in thy servant so long as I have been with thee unto this day, that I may not go fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Now you know he is acting. Achish answered and said, I know that thou art good in my sight as an angel of God. Notwithstanding, the princes favor thee not. Rise up in the morning and go. God got him out of that jam. 1 Corinthians 10:13. With the temptation he shall make a way of escape. Do you know that God will get you out of some jams that you get yourself into by making wrong decisions and compromise? God's mercy is still there. God knows your weakness. I'm not recommending wrong decisions. I'm just saying God will work with you. God will work with you. God will help you. God's mercy will be there to help you. Some people think the pastors missed it. My friend, God's mercy is with them. God will make a way. If that's true, God will get them back on the right track. I'm not worried about it. Do you know I've released the pastor? Talk about releasing your mate, releasing your connections. I've released the pastor. I've released him to be the pastor. A lot of people are backseat driving around here. They are. I heard of somebody just the other day talking about, well, I've been in a lot of Pentecostal moves, and I can see this one's getting off. And I thought, well, I can see you're committed. You know, where's the commitment to what God is doing? I'm committed to what God is doing. I'm committed to pray if it gets off. I'm just going to go someplace else. Chapter 30. Well, bad news back at the ranch. David got back to Ziklag and the whole place had been captured. You know what the problem in the church is today? It's the old saying, too many chiefs and not enough Indians. That's a problem in the church. The Amalekites, David's old friends, they had smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire. They had taken the women captives. Verse 3, David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. Their wives, their sons, their daughters were taken captives. Friend, if the devil's got your family, hooray, and don't give up. Hold on to God. David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. I conclude that it was a bad decision to go down to the Philistines. David's two wives were taken. David was greatly distressed. He was greatly distressed. I think David recognized he'd made a wrong turn back in chapter 27, verse 1. The people spake of stoning him. Your typical church. Fire the pastor. Go ahead. David's men. David's loyal 600. They were tested to the hilt when their wives and children were taken and all their belongings burned up. They were tested to the hilt. They spake of firing him. stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But we're up in chapter 30. We're not in chapter 14. David encouraged himself in the Lord. David's been doing that for quite some time now, and it gets to be routine after a while. Why, you get into enough battles, and you just learn how to go on with God no matter what. You learn how to pray. You learn how to get a hold of God. You learn how to claim truth. You learn how to walk in the truth. The Lord's trying to grow us up around here. A lot of people are tired of the battles. I'm tired of losing. That's what I'm tired of. I'm not tired of the battles. I'm tired of losing the battles. When you get tired of losing the battles, now you're on the right track. You know, some people are tired of tests in Bible college. Friend, just be tired of failing them. Just get A's on them and you won't be tired of them. God had not forsaken David, but God is allowing David to manifest the fruit of a wrong turn. But God is teaching him. Do you know that God was in all of David's trials? God went with David in the trial. And he's with you in your trial. Have you made some wrong turns in this move? God's with you. That doesn't justify your wrong turns, but God's with you. God allows you to make the wrong turns, but he'll teach you. God won't even remove the trials. He'll show you how to overcome them. I think David learned humility here. He also learned not to make decisions when you're under a demon of fear. He also learned he could make a mistake and all the fruit of it. He really ended up in a mess now. The people didn't stone David, however. You know why? Because there was nobody else that had the anointing. Besides that, they had to get their sons and daughters back. And without David, they were in trouble. You may be griping about the pastor, but he's the only one that's going to get us there. Because nobody else can take the ship. David said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring me the ephod." We better get the voice of God on this one. Do you know that after a while you learn to call on God when you're in trouble? And you learn to get direction? When you've done it yourself and fallen flat on your face, after a while you just learn to get a hold of God. David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them?" The Lord said, "Pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them and without fail recover all." God has said he will restore all that the cankerworm has eaten. He will not restore all that the cankerworm has eaten if we continue in unbelief and in disobedience, because we won't get to where God wants us. Do you know when Israel was in the promised land under Joshua, it, as it were, restored in a great measure all that they'd gone through in the wilderness? Do you know the memory of the wilderness was probably pretty dim about the time they were in the land of milk and honey? In fact, I'll bet they looked back on it and were glad they left Egypt. Now, in the middle of the wilderness, they looked back on it and said, "Woe unto us, we want to go back to Egypt." But when you're in Canaan, it's like, "I'm glad I left Egypt." Let's not, in the middle of the battle, decide it was better off a couple years ago than it is today. Because when we get through the battle, then we're going to look back on it and we're going to be glad we left Egypt. Because we'll have come up spiritually and we'll forget all the negative. You'll forget the negative. You know, it's like a woman. "I'll never have another baby again," till a couple months later. Then she's ready to have another one. But in the middle of labor, never again. It's always that way. You forget the negative. You forget the pain. You forget how bad it was. And all of a sudden, you remember what it was like. I remember I used to go mountain climbing. I don't think I ever went on a real big mountain climb where I didn't wonder what I was doing there. Missing a nice warm home and or bed, if we'd been hiking for 20 hours in a row, and wondering, thinking in my mind, I don't know how I enjoy this. I always look forward to going mountain climbing, but when I'm totally beat, wore out, dragging, and dead tired, and wanting just to lie down in the snow and die, what am I doing up here? I'm not having any fun at all. But I went and looked forward to the next climb. It's incredible. I really thought that. And I even when I thought how rotten it was, I thought, I'll go on another climb. But when your body feels rotten, you wonder what you're doing there. But we're getting somewhere. Verse 9, David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor. David encouraged himself in the Lord. Read the book of Psalms. There's encouragement there. Do you need encouragement in the Lord? Has the devil come up and robbed you? Are you in a trial? Have you wept until there's no more power to weep? Verse 4. I know some people that have. It's time to encourage yourself in the Lord. It's time, and the Psalms. Do you know, when you really, I was in a pit one time. I've been in some pits. I wallpapered my pit. I'm just kidding. No, I'm planning on getting out. Some people have wallpapered their pit. They don't plan on getting out. I do. But I would read in the Psalms, and I would read, even Psalms 23 ministered. I'll get to the first word. Wow, I ministered. The Lord. Boy, ponder that. I must have thought for 30 minutes on the two words, the Lord. Boy, that ministered to me. Just the fact that he existed ministered to me. That really ministered. Not to mention the rest of the psalm. I used to read the psalms real slow and think about them and visualize them and apply them to my life. And it encouraged me. It strengthened me. It caused me to know God. Fires are good for you if you'll seek God in the midst of them. Now, they came to the brook Besor, and 200 men were so faint they could not go over the brook Besor. Get that. God said, pursue after the troop, you will overcome them and recover all. And 200 men were so faint they could not go on. I'm telling you, brother, that's faint. When you can't go on to a battle to recover your own wife and children, and you can imagine the traumatic emotion that was on them for fear as to what has happened to their wife and children under the hand of the Amalekites, who were, you know, the most friendly nation that they had been next to. For 200 people to be so faint they can't get an adrenaline high to go on at that time, brother, you know they were out of it. They were really faint. Now, I said all that to say this. If the 200 were so faint they couldn't even go on in a time of national emergency, probably the greatest thing you could go through, losing your wife and family, the 400 men were at least almost as faint. It wasn't that the 400 were fresh as daisies and the 200 were absolutely dead and couldn't move. They were all about the same. See, they were all about the same, but 200 were just a little bit worse and couldn't go on. Now, when 600 men travel together and go through hardships together and everything else, they're all about the same. I mean, some are stronger than others. What was the distinguishing factor in verse 10 between the 400 and the 200? My own feeling is, and I'm reading a lot into this, but I've got something to work off of. Now, you have to admit the 400 had to have been near exhaustion, too. See, it only stands to reason that they're all tired. But I believe the 400 went on willpower. Willpower. Two things that I remember seeing one time. I remember seeing this race they have over in Hawaii. Or they call it the marathon, or the Ironman. Okay, you have to swim, I don't know how many miles. Then you have to bicycle, I believe it's 30 miles. And then you have to run the last 20 miles, something like that. And it's about 100 degrees, was it? 100 degrees. Okay. Now, they had the women's entry. And they showed this woman, and she was way out ahead of everybody else. And she came to a point where she was a total, absolute zombie. And she was going totally on willpower and reflexes. She was literally out of her mind. And, of course, I can't remember the network that was running this or the announcer. One of these famous sports announcers, you know. And all of a sudden, they recognized that they had a real show in her. Of course, she was the leader anyway. They're going to focus on her. And so, I mean, they built this thing up. They made this thing dramatic. I mean, they followed her. She got about 300 yards from the finish line and fell flat on her face. And lay there, and they were, you know, I mean, they were, everybody was into this. I mean, the announcers, I mean, they got into it. You know, was she going to move? And she got up and went, and you could tell that she was literally out of her mind. Her mind was no longer able to function, and she was just going on sheer willpower and determination. Her bodily she lost control of her bladder and all the rest because she was out of her mind, and it was way beyond exhaustion. And she kept on going and kept on going. I mean, they kept the cameras on her. They built this thing up. I mean, there were people, I'm sure there were people emotionally distraught for her. And she ended up crawling part of the way and dragging herself. Meanwhile, other runners came, passed her by. First place, second place, third place. I can't even remember. She finished in the top 10. But she was way out ahead of everybody. And as I was watching this, you can be sure it was going on in my head. I was thinking, Christians, shame. Shame. Here's some sinner out here running for a crown that fadeth away, laying up treasures on earth, and look at the intensity that they'll put into it. I mean, to go through all of that just to finish some silly race that isn't going to make one bit of difference. And anyway, she finally made it over the finish line. They took her to the hospital in an aid car. And about 3 hours later, you know the cameras, they had to have an interview. They were more interested in her than the winner. The winner got maybe 2 minutes of, you know, or 20 seconds of, you know, congratulations. They had to go interview this woman and talk about what she went through and go, I mean, they really went through this thing. Another thing I remember reading about in National Geographic is the guy that climbed Mount Everest all by himself. Oh, let's see now. He climbed it all by himself, but he climbed it without oxygen. That was it. He's the only one to ever climb it without oxygen. And I might have the story wrong. It might be another mountain, but I think it was Mount Everest. Anyway, the brain does weird things when you're without oxygen. He honestly could not remember a lot of the climb. And he climbed totally on instinct because he was out of his mind. His mind totally clicked out. And he is narrating the story of what he went through in this climb without oxygen to make that last... I mean, very few people have ever made it up the top of Everest. Or maybe it was another mountain. It was one of those mountains that was rough to climb without oxygen. By the way, you can feel it on the top of Mount Rainier. The last couple thousand feet, you can feel the difference. Besides that, you're tired anyway about that time. But this guy climbed on sheer willpower. The difference is will. Just the will to do it. And a lot of people that have been in sports know what a second wind is. What a second wind really is a will to go on. And somehow, because of the will to go on, it's like you get more tired and more tired and more tired and more tired, and you're about to quit, but you're not going to quit, and your will pushes you through, and all of a sudden, something happens in your body, and you get some type of energy from somewhere, and all of a sudden, things get easy again, and you can go on for a long time. They call that your second wind. It has to do with the will. The will somehow enables you some way to get energy out of your body that you somehow couldn't get at the first. A lot of football teams have won, and it's been stated in the papers, they wanted to win more than we did. That's what the losers have often said. It was a battle of willpower. A lot of things have been decided on willpower. A lot of people have made, accomplished things just on willpower because they willed to do something and refused anything less. I am ad-libbing and reading all that into verse 10. I am saying and I am believing that the 400 men went beyond the 200 because of willpower. Their will somehow got them over that brook, got them down to those Amalekites, caused them to smite the Amalekites, and to rescue their wives and children and recover all the cattle and so forth, purely on willpower. Now the Amalekites, they've robbed the church for years. They've been robbing the church for years. Yeah, they've been robbing of our children. Look at all the children that are out here unsaved now, into drugs or some other thing. God has promised restoration. I believe that's part of the restoration. In our personal lives, of our friends, of a lot of things, the devil has robbed. Now, you can't always rest when you're tired. There are times when you have to call within yourself, and in the name of the Lord, you have just got to go on. You've got to go on. There are a lot of people telling me, just can't take anymore. Just can't take anymore. I happen to know that you can. I know you can. My question is, are you willing to take anymore? That is the real question. It's not whether you can. Sinners can. Sinners can take more. See? Do you know that a lot of people dropped out of that race before they ever got to where that woman was? They dropped out of the race. They got to a pain threshold that was beyond what they're willing to bear, and they dropped out of the race. You know, we'll train harder, try it again next year. It's hot, you know, and they're tired. I mean, how many times have we quit because we were just tired? We're just not willing to take anymore. This is a long battle. And it's going to come down to willpower. And it's going to come down to being willing to be under God's anointing. You're not going to make it in yourself either. There's a lot of power in the human will, but it's going to have to go beyond that into the Spirit of God. And so that's quite a ways, when a lot of people aren't even at the end of their own human endurance yet and are going to quit early. These 400 men should challenge us to pursue the enemy of our souls until we have utterly defeated them and rescue and recover all, no matter how faint you are. Don't give up on God, yourself, the church, or anything else. Exercise faith. Faith. Exercise faith. Refuse to be in a state of unbelief. Do you know we're battling demons of unbelief and doubt? We are. Refuse unbelief. I had to do something the other day. I listened to the pastor's sermon. When he preached that sermon, I knew I was unwilling to do some things. You know, the Lord deals with you on some areas when you're listening to a sermon. And I knew I was unwilling. Unwillingness never bothers me at all. See, that doesn't bother me. Because I know how to deal with unwillingness. Shouldn't you deal with unwillingness? You give it to the Lord. You keep taking it to the Lord. See, intellectually, I'm willing. Emotionally, and, you know, some other things, I'm unwilling. And so, but intellectually, I pray and I say, Lord, I want to be willing in this area, and I'm going to keep bringing this to you. And then I have people pray for me. If people are praying for me, I say, my will is weak. I can't find my will. I've got to make, and I don't even necessarily tell them the details. I just say, got to make a decision. I'm fighting to find my will. I got to make a decision. I got to make a commitment. I got to rise up in the Lord. I've got to do something. I'm not doing it. I'm not willing to do it. I'm struggling to do it. I'm trying to do it, and it's not there to do it. Pray for my will. So I get them to pray for my will. And I keep putting myself in it, and it isn't more than a couple weeks, and I'm willing. It's not a problem. I just keep taking it to the Lord, because I know that it is God that worketh in you both to will and to do. The Lord will strengthen me, and He'll rise me up till I'm willing. See, unwillingness has never been a problem. You just keep projecting it to the Lord, and you'll be willing. He'll help you. But that's because I have faith and know that He'll work. See? It's my faith in God that gets Him somehow, or His power, to work in my will and to get me through that. But I was unwilling in this, in these areas. And this is a big one. Boy, this is really a big one. And I thought, my man, this might take a year. You know, unbelief manifesting. And I got to talking with the pastor, and he said, I want you to make this commitment. And I thought, give me a month to think about it. He says, are you willing to do this? Are you willing? You know, no pep talk or anything else or encouragement. Now, are you willing to do this? Now, I'm pressing you for a point. And I said, yes, by faith. I figured, number one, I know it's God's will. I know I'm going to have to do it. See, I know I'm going to have to do it. If I stay in the boat and keep walking with God, it's going to have to be done. See, I have to be willing on every point. I'm going to get delivered of everything. I'm going to get rid of all selfishness. See, I'm going to have to make it. So why put it off? I'm going to have to be willing. Number two, it's going to be God that helps me get willing. And there's no use putting it off for a year when God can do it in a day. So I said, I'm willing by faith. And then, and I knew when I walked away, I had committed myself to the impossible. And I thought, Lord, I'm not backing out of that commitment. I've made a commitment, and I'm going to do it. And I got to do it now. I need faith, and I need it now. And I just refused to think about how hard it was, how unwilling I was, how many problems there were to overcome, how many hurts there have been. I refused to think anything about that. I only thought about, I'm willing. I'm going to, and I'm willing. I just blocked out everything. And I just anchored onto that, and with 1 week, it was easy. Within 1 week, I didn't even care anymore. No problem. This is a simp. It's like, I'm going to totally surrender in that particular issue. I'm going to surrender. I'm going to give it in. That's it. I'm done with fighting to save my life in that area. I'm willing. I'm going to die, and that's it. And I don't care about the past. It doesn't matter. And that's it. And I was willing. I was willing because He asked. And now, if He hadn't asked me to be, I wouldn't have been put on the line. I wouldn't have forced myself to get willing. I would still be in the unwilling state, but working on getting willing. But because I was put to the line, and I had to come up with it and fast, I got there fast. It's amazing what you can do when you have to. Now, after going through that, I recognize that I could do more than I'm now doing, because if I had to, I'd get it done. So I'm pushing myself more. I'm recognizing that I could do more. I'm just telling myself it's too hard, and therefore I need more time to get around to it, when actually that's just nothing but a big lie. I could have done more. I could have done it in less time. I'm glad I got it done as fast as I did. Now, if I have to face that issue, it's no problem. It's like the whole burden is off me. The burden is when you're unwilling and you're having to, you know, you're having to go through something you don't want to go through. But when you make the decision, you get free, and it's like, no problem. It's no problem at all. The demons are defeated. Now, I'm glad I went through that. But boy, for a while there, I wasn't. I thought, how did I get in this mess? Last time I ever go down and talk to the pastor during service. I didn't want to talk about that. I was talking about something else when I went down there. But he had something else on his mind. But the Lord can do it in your life. Now, these 400 are a challenge to us. You are not too tired where you have to lay down at the Brook Besor. You're not too tired. You can make it. Believe me, you can make it. You and God can make it. Well, I can't do it. Yeah, I told somebody, I know you can't do it, but you need God. And if you don't do it, it's going to be your lack of faith and getting a hold of God's word that is the problem, not your weak condition. So put that in your hat and wear it for a while. Get it through your head. I won't read the rest of the chapter. Let's see if I have anything to say about it. They got it. They recovered all. Not only that, they got more spoil than when they started, because the Amalekites had spoil from other cities they'd raided. And so when Israel got the spoil of their own belongings back, they got everything else the Amalekites had. Do you know that not only are you going to recover all, but you're going to come out ahead? Because God's going to put something in you as a result of the battle, and you're going to get more. Do you know that we're going to get more out of this life because the devil is here than if the devil wasn't here? You're going to get more. Yes, you're going to get more trouble because the devil's here, but you're going to get more glory because the devil's here. Because the devil is harassing you and forcing you to get a hold of God. And all of that time getting a hold of God and rising up to fight somebody, it's like if you want to improve at a sport, compete with somebody that's better than you are. Ski with somebody that's better than you are and try to chase them down the hill. You will improve rapidly because they will continually push you to your limit to keep up with them. That's how I learned how to ski. Started out skiing with somebody who was a downhill racer for a university. I wasn't a downhill racer, but sometimes I thought I was a cannonball. Well, we had a 5-minute lesson on how to get your skis on and how to walk forward and sideways and how to grab that rope. Started out on rope toes, and that was it. And we were off. And no lesson on turning or anything like that. It was like, aim your skis downhill and hang on. And we mostly shooshed everything we did. What a way to learn how to ski. And I took some of the wildest falls you ever imagine. I mean, I was lucky I was just young. I'm sure my bones were like rubber. But we learned how to ski. And after a while, we were on the chairlift doing the same thing. And it was just one long shoosh. Moguls, you could park a truck in them. Shoosh the moguls. I'm not kidding you. That's what the downhill racer did. We didn't keep up with him all the time. He was usually going like this, and we were crashing and burning about 4 times down the hill. But I know in that year, I learned probably 5 years worth of skiing in just 1 year because I was pushed to the max. Later on, I started skiing with other people, and I noticed I would ski all day and never fall down. That meant I was never learning anything. I was never being pushed to go beyond my ability. Never fell down the whole day. And I didn't necessarily like falling down either. And I wouldn't purposely ski to max out where I would, you know, risk things and fall down. But when I skied with the other guy, we were always on the verge of disaster. That's how we skied, on the absolute edge of totally out of control. I noticed I wasn't learning and getting that much better either. Well, the Lord will, if you try to keep up with Jesus, you'll learn plenty.
Let me ask you a question. Can we say the necromancy?